Welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Coviello, and as the Drop-In CEO, I drop into businesses and assume the CEO role to enhance the human element and increase the results they achieve. This podcast is about bringing you conversations with expert guests who have achieved their greatest results built on a strong foundation of purpose, values, and elevating people. If you're a business leader, entrepreneur, or even just getting started in business, join us as we build the skills you need to achieve your goals. Hello, and welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Coviello, and I'm excited to introduce to you today David Bricker. He has spent 15 years sailing in search of stories. He's the author of 12 books, including an adventure sailing memoir, 2 books about writing, and 3 about storytelling. His company, Remarkable Stories, Inc., teaches the art of business transformation through storytelling. And if you want to say it, share it, or sell it, bring him your story. He'll help you to tell it. So I have the great fortune of introducing you to him. He's got a fantastic voice. His stories are so engaging, and I'm excited to bring the conversation to you. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thanks, Deb. It's an honor to be here. I'm excited.
So you are a fantastic storyteller. So let's just start with your story. Can you share a little bit about who you are, your business journey, and the work that you're most proud of that you're doing now?
Let's see. My story, I could take up the whole show with that, but I'll resist that temptation and give you the short version. My father was a doctor and my mother was a lawyer, and I was a disappointment. When I, not really, I actually fight with my parents, but when I was 18 years old, after being a private prep school kid, I worked on an art project in Miami. And on that project, I met some folks who lived on sailboats in the free anchorage in Miami. And they didn't have a lot of money, but what they lacked in money, they had in character. And they had these amazing stories. They had traveled to all of these places I'd never heard of and dealt with storms and reefs and calms and groundings. And I was just fascinated because I thought stories were something that you found in books and movies. Could you get out in the world and really have adventures? That thought changed my world. And by the time I graduated college, I had a small sailboat that I bought for about $3,000. I worked for another 6 months, threw my keys into Biscayne Bay, and I took off for the Bahamas with $30 in my pocket and a locker full of food and dreams. I sailed thousands of miles up and down the Bahamas. I did a transatlantic in 1991 on a friend's wooden boat, which was just an unbelievable experience full of all of those stories that I had been seeking. And I came back to the land of clocks and calendars, and I sat on all those stories for a while, because when you've had these extraordinary experiences, they don't bind you to humanity. I mean, there are people who want to hear them, but you end up being a bit of a freak. And the last thing you want to do is go to the party and have, oh, you're that guy who lives on a boat. It's like, okay, so much for relating to anybody on a normal level. But as I pondered those stories, and as I began to work with writers, and as I began to become a writer, I wanted to put those stories to work. And I began thinking about, what is a story? And why are stories so powerful? Why will we watch a movie 10 minutes in? We know it's a terrible movie, but we've got to watch it all the way through to see how it ends. Stories are so captivating. And so I became a bit of a storyologist. And through my writing and my speaking and my graphic design and my technology and my music, all the things I love, I realized it's all storytelling, and that's been my playground ever since. That's the short version of the story.
But I'm curious. You keep saying you have all of these stories. Tell me one. Inspire me, because I long for adventure as well. What's one of your favorite stories from all this sailing?
One of my favorite stories, I was 25 years old, sailing alone on a 26-foot boat. And I was getting ready to sail across the Gulf Stream back to Miami over water that was more than 2,700 feet deep. And I waited for my weather window, because the Gulf Stream is like a river within the ocean, and it flows between the Bahamas and Florida. And when the wind blows with the current, the water is relatively calm, your normal ocean swells. And when the wind goes against the current, if it blows with any speed, then the wind pushes against the waves and they pick up and it gets pretty rough out there. And I took off in the afternoon, and the first 6 hours was just glorious sailing. Cue the harp music and those wonderful pictures in the movie of the rays of light and the waves and the sparkle. I mean, it's one of those sails that you live for. But as darkness fell, the temperature went down and the wind came up. And a little time went by and the temperature came down some more and the wind came up. And pretty soon, I was out there in some pretty rough seas. I went and took one of the sails down so I wouldn't overpower the boat. And it's the only time I have ever lashed myself into the cockpit with a piece of rope, because I was taking big, disorganized waves over the boat. And I was towing a dinghy behind me, which was crazy. I only got away with this because I didn't know what I was doing and the gods took mercy on me. Had I been a more experienced sailor at the time, I don't think they would have let me get away with it. But that's superstitious stuff. Anyway, I'm out there and I look up to the top of my mast and my little mast headlight is starting to flicker and go dim because my battery is dying. I'm out in the big seas and I see lights on the horizon. And it's two gigantic freighters and an enormous cruise ship converging. Now, they can see each other. They're not going to hit each other, but there's no way they can see me in these seas. So I watch the lights very carefully, and I'm out there, and I adjust my course, and I dodge the two freighters, and then I cut behind the cruise ship. And I'm close enough to the stern of that cruise ship to hear that of the engines, that thrum of the big engines. And then I look up into the stern of the cruise ship and I see flashing lights from the disco and I see the silhouettes of people dancing and I hear this little and I'm thinking, my God, I'm having a very different experience in the same place at the same time. I'm fighting for survival, and these people are fighting to get to the bar for their third margarita. Now, if you're wondering, I did survive. I got through. I made it to shore. There's a little bit more to it, but I think we all feel like that at times. I think we're out there on the seas of business, and we're trying to get noticed, and there are these freighters and cruise ships, these big behemoths out there, and maybe it's just you in your little boat trying to find your way from conflict to transformation, trying to get your message out, trying to be seen with your dim little light in those big waves. And there are business lessons in stories like this for everybody. And this is one of the reasons I love stories. Anybody can sit there and bloviate about the mountain they climbed or the marathon they won or the ocean they crossed or whatever it was. How do you put your story in the service of your listener?
So we didn't rehearse this and Dave didn't have any idea I was going to ask him that. But, you know, obviously, I hope people that are listening were as captivated as I was, and then bringing it home and then tying it to a life lesson was just absolutely powerful. And so you teach this to professionals. Why should leaders in business really care about this? I mean, that we pay them for their expertise and their leadership persona to deliver a message. Why is storytelling so important?
Stories are the most powerful form of communication we have. And to me, the golden rule of storytelling is that stories are always about people. Now, they may appear to be about aliens or talking animals, but at least metaphorically, stories are always about people. And if you're not talking about people, you're not telling stories. If you're not telling stories, you're not connecting. And if you're not connecting, you're not selling. And before anybody gets a bad attitude about the S word, we're all selling. We're selling ideas. We're selling our credibility. It's not just about the transaction, the products and services. Anyone who's tried to put a child to bed is selling. And we're trying to influence other people all the time. And what so many leaders, marketers, people do, they get up there and they talk about prices, processes, ingredients, and data. And you know what? It doesn't engage people. It's just another list of stuff. It's the old adage about sell the benefits, not the features, but it gives it some context. So I could go deeper in what stories are and how they work and why they affect us the way they do, but people need to learn to reframe the conversation in terms of the outcomes they produce for the people they serve.
So you bring up a really, really great point. And, you know, I've heard different people talk about, you know, you shouldn't be selling, you should be seeing people, you should be establishing connections before the transaction. And it can all get very confusing. But you make a really good point. It's connect with the human. You are trying to not sell your souls, but just kind of connect the souls. And you do have to bring the best of who you are out. You have to be yourself. And storytelling is one way of just revealing your soul. It's bringing your mind and your soul together out in front of the world to really understand who you are. And you really bring up another good point. And this is something I need to do more about. I have stories, but sometimes we're scared of the stories because it reveals vulnerable things about who we are that we want to forget about. But then on the other hand, these are the things that make us who we are today. So all the more reason that we should get better at storytelling. But I wonder, sounds easy. You make it sound so easy. What are some of the mistakes so that leaders make, and then they have to call you to learn how to do it? I'd love to know more how you fix them.
Well, I think the data dump is one of the principal mistakes that we see. That is talking about the features, and scientists do this a lot too. Let me give you the data. Let me show you an Excel spreadsheet. And they don't talk about what the data mean. And I don't just mean the logical conclusions. I mean, okay, we've come to a scientific conclusion. What is the impact on the community, the company, the humanity, the leadership, the corporate culture, whatever it may be? Unless we feel that the data means something to us, guess what? We don't care. It can be earth-shaking. It could be groundbreaking. And people struggle. Oh, my invention is so important. This is going to change. You know, we're going to cure cancer, whatever it is. But if they can't frame it in a way that is based on the outcomes for people in a meaningful way, they wonder, I had the best invention. I couldn't get anybody to listen to it. I couldn't get it funded. How many brilliant ideas are sitting in file boxes or in the back of people's brains because they were unable to reframe the conversation, shift it from data to benefits? Other things that people do is, we see this all the time, and it's a variation on the data dump, is they get up there and they talk about themselves. I could have told my story of crossing the Gulf Stream, and I could have said da-da-da, and then I got through and told the rest of the story and how I finally pulled in and anchored the boat, and I was safe, and I got back, and okay, great. And at some point, if I drag the story too long, people are going to pick up their phones and say, hey, I wonder if anybody needs me, because I'm talking about myself. And the purpose really of a story, of a speech, of any kind of meaningful message is to transform the person who's receiving that message in some way. So if you're up there talking about yourself, narcissism is the only disease in the world where the sicker you are, the better you feel. We have way too much of that in the world. How can you take your message and find a way to put it in the service of your listener? Now, that can be an advertising message. Great. You want people to buy your services. Look, we both do. Let's be transparent. We're marketing here on some level, but we do that by serving the people who listen to us rather than saying, hey, send me money, buy this from me, here are my products. Okay, there are a million people doing that. How about offering some value to somebody and helping that person come to the conclusion that, gee, Deb is a relationship-worthy person. I'd like to find out more about what she has to offer. Because not only will she help my company, but I think she'd be fun to work with. I think I could grow as a person by being exposed to her experiences and knowledge and ideas, because people buy with emotion and justify with logic. Make that spiritual connection. The transaction is a byproduct.
So I have a sweet spot for young professionals, and we teach our young professionals along the way, and even leaders, you know, knowledge is power. Data is power. The more people around you is power. But we don't talk to people about outcomes. And through the selling and connecting, being able to make an impact. I've seen so many engineers deliver information and say, this is why we need to buy this new piece of equipment. Instead of saying something, well, here is the impact. If we don't buy this new piece of equipment, yes, we may be lucky. We may not have any issues with our customers, but the one time the piece of equipment doesn't perform and we have a quality issue, we could kill a brand. We could kill a person. And when you put things in the context of relatable situations, they can see themselves in the story. The power of the message, the power of the communication, and to your point, the storytelling is so much more impactful. And I just wish so many more people would learn the beauty of storytelling.
Let's frame that, if I may, just a quick example. Let's take something we're all getting used to, video conferencing. Doesn't matter if it's Skype or Zoom or any platform that you're using. And it would be easy to list the features. This application offers audio and video. It offers echo cancellation. It offers perhaps a green screen capability and virtual background. And you can use breakout rooms. And these are all the features. What's the real importance of it? The idea that you can look a single person or an audience, see the faces of people, and you can speak and engage in real time, and you can see what's going on in their faces and in their eyes, and you can have that spiritual, personal, beautiful human connection, even though people may be thousands of miles away. The rest of it's just the tool that enables you to do that. How many people in isolation today are keeping their hearts full because they're able to connect with loved ones on a screen? And yeah, it's just pixels. You could say, look, a screen is just a big board that turns colored lights on and off. It's an illusion. But all of those facial cues, emotional cues, the laughter, the pauses, all of that human communication can be sent and received through this medium. That's why it's meaningful. It's keeping a lot of people sane and alive right now. Whether the echo cancellation works, yeah, we care about that, but only because of the outcomes it produces.
So you have so much knowledge, and I want to go in another direction here. You've written a book about speaking inside the box, on-screen presentation tips and tricks. But I'm also curious, and I'd love for you to share more about the story behind that story, about performance. Because you talk about data dump versus maybe you want to have a desired impact, an outcome, and a connect with people emotionally, but you also talk about performance. And that can have a positive or negative connotation. Can you tell me more about that?
Well, to clarify, I mean, there's two meanings of performance. One is your speed, your efficiency, things like that. When I talk about performance, I talk about, for example, public speaking. And I guess writing is a form of performance, but I love the art of public speaking. Because, look, I lived on a sailboat for 15 years. I invented introvert. And if you put me in a room full of people and I need to network with those people one at a time, I find it very difficult to come up with something to start a conversation with that's really authentic. A lot of introverts become public speakers because when you get on the platform, you can connect with 50, 100, 500 people at a time. But to do that effectively, not only do you tell stories, but you deliver stories in a way that engages people, that commands attention, that builds that relationship, that establishes your credibility. And a single line can fall flat, or it can just get everybody in the room mesmerized. And when you can get somebody in that state, in that place, then you can connect with a lot of people at the same time. It's not about exerting hypnotic influence that gets people to part with money. It's about inviting a deeper level of communication. And it works with an audience. It works with one person. And it centers on, like right now, I'm using my voice in a very resonant way. I'm not doing it consciously. But if I was less secure, maybe this is my first podcast and I might be talking a little bit more like this without realizing it, not using my chest voice, using my head voice. An exercise that I love to do with speakers. I've got a bunch of these exercises. Take a line like, the hardest thing to live with is regret. Okay, let's put some emphasis and pauses. The hardest thing to live with is regret. And all of a sudden, everyone's leaning forward in the, you know, come on, give me the answer. I'm dying here. Right. And all of these little devices that we use, the way we learn to use the stage or the screen, even if I'm talking about the past, the present, and the future, I might walk from my right to the center of the stage, to the left of the stage, which is, of course, opposite for the audience who reads left to right. So I move from right to left, and they are subconsciously watching me make that journey from conflict to transformation. But maybe you're sitting at a webcam. So maybe you swivel your office chair and you move yourself subtly. You anchor your thoughts or ideas, or you hold a hand up here and then you hold a hand up on the other side. All of these little techniques. And some people think they're Jedi mind tricks. There's a little bit of voodoo influence going on. But, you know, it's human psychology. It makes your message more engaging. And what we're trying to do is communicate with people. It's like any other superpower. You can use it for good. You can use it for evil. But public speaking is a learnable skill. And the byproduct of it is I've seen people come in to a public speaking group like Toastmasters, and you introduce yourself, and they look down at their feet and they extend a wet noodle handshake to you. And they're so pathologically shy that it's amazing that they're even in the room. They're challenging themselves to be there. 3 months later, they're up there giving their forced speech, and they're on the adrenaline rush of it. They're getting that rush, like, okay, I was terrified to make the first jump out of the airplane. This is my fourth jump, and I guess I'm still a little nervous, but I'm loving that free fall. This is exciting, and at the end, these people are going to clap for me, and I'm going to get this big dopamine hit, this big rush of oxytocin, whatever it is, and I can't wait to do this again. And it transforms people, not just on the stage. All of a sudden, that person is not so afraid to walk up to somebody attractive and invite them to dinner or start a conversation, or maybe ask for a raise, or maybe just say no when somebody's asking them to do so much. So to me, presentation skills, performance skills are the road to self-confidence. And we all battle the demons of self-doubt. That's part of the human condition.
So there's so much in that. I'm just going to let that pause, theatrical pause, and let all that absorb, because that's extremely powerful for anybody that's listening to this. Find your voice, find your story, find your confidence. It's beautiful. So you have so many stories. You work with people, organizations. I'd love another story. Have you ever worked with a client or an organization where you dropped in, they were a tough nut, you had to try to move them from their current state to a future state? I'd love to know a little bit more. And how did you move them to become comfortable and impactful through storytelling?
Well, this is years ago, but I got a call from a big pharma company, and they were working on a gigantic project. And what was interesting about that project was, I mean, look, I'm not going to claim it was my idea, but they were working on a biologic drug that was an immunosuppressant drug, and it would help treat conditions like rheumatoid arthritis, conditions where your immune system attacks your own body. So it would suppress the immune system. Of course, there are risks in doing that. You open yourself up to infection and other problems. And the traditional pharma marketing approach is to tell everybody how great the drug is. And then underneath, it's like some assembly required, batteries not included, all models are 18 years or older. You know, this crap at the bottom of the thing that people pretend not to hear. And it's a credibility killer. And nobody wants to even acknowledge that it's like, really, you're going to tell me in as fast as you can and as low as you can what's wrong with it? And I'm just supposed to ignore that? Anyway, it's insane marketing. But these folks had this idea, we're going to list all of the benefits, we're going to list all of the risks, we're going to put up all of the scientific data, all the registry data, all the studies for people to look. This is a site for doctors, not for consumers. And then we're going to put up all of the natural history of the various diseases. So you've got a reference for rheumatoid arthritis and Crohn's disease and so on and so forth. And the doctors, initially, they did a study, and the doctor said, why are you doing this? We can get all of this information on PubMed. We don't need it. We won't look at it. Forget it. They had over 100 people writing content. They spent $4 million putting this website together. And there was a rule at the time. The FDA said you have to disclose benefits and risks in equal proportion. Now, intuitively, that makes sense. We're going to keep it fair. And we didn't do that. The FDA flagged us and said, you can't launch the site. And we said, well, we have four times more risk information than benefit information. Do you want us to hype the benefits or withhold the risks? And the FDA kind of said, what do we do with this? This is not what we were expecting. And we ended up changing the way pharmaceutical marketing was done. Complete transparency, no disclaimer. We designed the site to, because my role was principally a design role on this particular project, we designed it to look very much like a medical journal. It was text heavy. It had paper backgrounds. It was designed for kind of an academic culture. The language and the tone was not marketing focused. And the whole purpose was not you should buy our drug. It's you should evaluate whether our drug is a better fit for your patient than the one that you are currently using. And if it's not, you should keep up what you're using, but make an informed decision. And it was a very ethical direction that we could have more market share and produce better outcomes for some patients. The site launched, it got written up in the Wall Street Journal, and it made the company $4 billion. There's storytelling.
That's pretty impactful.
Not only is it storytelling, but instead of talking about ourselves, we took all that information, all that data, and we put it in the service of the doctors so they could make better decisions and put that information in the service of their patients. We told stories. We focused on outcomes and transformations. That huge science fiction business result was a byproduct of being of service to people.
So, you've honed your skill over many, many years, and you do it so well. But if somebody knows they need to start developing their storytelling, public speaking skills, and they are maybe introverted, they're scared of standing up, they cringe, they'd rather, I don't know, jump off a cliff. What are just a couple tips? Just what can they just start doing now before engaging maybe with an expert or with some of your work? What can they start now to do?
Number one is join a Toastmasters club. They've all gone virtual because of COVID-19, and that's for a lot of people an even greater level of safety. I think the average Toastmaster club costs $65 a semester. It's the cheapest professional development you can get. You'll find yourself in a room full of mostly professional people, some experienced, some complete neophytes, and it's dedicated to the art of public speaking. And I just see that program transform people. I have a club myself that I run, a Toastmasters club on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. If you look at WynToast, WynToast.com, you can get the information about that. But there are over 250,000 Toastmasters members in, I think, 206 countries around the world. It's a gigantic international organization, and you can go to Toastmasters.org and find a club that's near you so that when everything opens up one day, hopefully you can go back and be in a physical room with these people. Beyond that, it's a matter of realizing that public speaking is scary for a lot of people. But you're not going to get injured. You're not going to get hurt. You get up in front of a room full of people. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? Let's say you just get up and you freeze. Well, gee, it's happened to people before. But it happened to Cavett Robert, who was the person who founded the National Speakers Association. And I think he was in junior high school or high school, and he had to get up and give a speech, and he stared at the audience for a short while, froze, and finally ran out of the room and never went back to that school. And he went on to form the NSA, the National Speakers Association, the NSA that talks, not the NSA that listens. And this is a transformation that anybody can make. And you just have to say, yes, it's going to be scary, but I'm not going to get hurt. Nobody's going to make fun of me. If anything, people will be sympathetic. And okay, you get up, you fall off, get up and do it again. If you think about not so much your own fear, but if you think about the idea that the purpose of a speech is to transform the audience, and you work backward from those outcomes. Because let's face it, some of our listeners are going to get asked to speak at a conference, at a meeting, at a Rotary Club, at a Chamber of Commerce, and most of them go up, oh, gee, I need to humanize this. Let me put in a picture of my family. Here are my kids. Okay, great. That's not how you do it. How do you serve the audience? How do you let them know that you understand their pain point? When you are up there to serve, to teach valuable lessons, to give people takeaways, then you can turn nervous into service. And it works. It really works. And then it's like anything else. You practice it. It is like playing a musical instrument. You speak more. You get in front of audiences. You get feedback. You polish your craft. You take the journey. You enjoy the journey. And the next thing you know, you're being of value to rooms full of people.
Excellent advice. And I'm not going to go into my horror story, senior year of college, freezing, sweating, and swearing. I'm never going to go through a negative public speaking event again. And I, too, joined Toastmasters. Dave knows what he's talking about. So you have done some amazing work with people and businesses and individuals. I understand you may have some exciting new things maybe coming up that you wanted to share with everybody.
Well, thank you. One, of course, is the Speak Inside the Box book, because we are all, it's probably a little lit up on my lights here, but it's all my books and stuff are on Amazon, Speak Inside the Box. And that's just the basics of looking good on camera with proper lights, if you want to get into green screens, and if you want to take it all the way to creating a virtual stage, some of what's involved in doing that. It's not a very techie book because the technology is going to change in 2 months. It always does. But the basics are there. My own website is storysailing.com. And there's a blog there. I post every 2 weeks and send out my newsletter so I don't inundate people. I just sent out post number 53. And the posts are about writing, speaking, storytelling, all of that stuff, my playground. And then I've just, as of last Sunday, launched 2 new Sunday masterclasses. If you go to publicspeakersmasterclass.com, I have affordable masterclasses on public speaking. And you can do your first one. There's a coupon code for $1. After that, they're about $20 a session. And it's everything from people working on Toastmasters speeches to sales pitches to mission statements to elevator pitches, anything spoken. And then following that at 3:15 is the liveauthorsworkshop.com. And there we get deep into the written word and pretty much do the same thing. And I feature 5 people in each session. I'll probably go to 4 in the writing because it takes a little more time. And we put the speakers on the screen, or we put the writing on the screen, and we do live coaching sessions, and it's a lot of fun.
All right. Incredible value. This has been amazing. I sincerely appreciate you. Just have an amazing speaking voice. I'm so envious, and obviously it's kept you quite successful storytelling yourself and helping others to tell their story. Any other ways of contacting you that we should know about, or it's all on your websites?
Storysailing.com is there. I'm findable on Facebook and LinkedIn, but storysailing.com is my hub.
All right. This has been a fantastic conversation, Dave. I really, really enjoyed it. This is one time I didn't have to talk as much because you have such engaging stories. So sincerely appreciate your time and sharing your wisdom with the listeners. Thank you so much.
And Deborah, thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure.
All right, be well. Thank you for listening to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I hope you are inspired by our conversation and can apply what you heard to your business or career goals. For more information about our consulting or coaching services, please visit my website at dropinceo.com or visit our Drop-In CEO Facebook group to continue the conversation. Now go out, lead, inspire, and achieve your goals.